This is a CBC podcast.
So it was July 30th, 1992. It was the 100-meter backstroke final at the Olympics. It was just before 8 p.m., and it was just such a beautiful evening. The sun was starting to set, the pool lights came on, there's just a magical atmosphere, there's 12,000 people in the stands. We're brought out for the race, and it always takes a few minutes because of the introductions. And I'll never forget that in my pre-race strategy, it was like, smile, enjoy this moment. And when you look back at the footage, there I am, and I'm introduced, and I'm actually smiling.
Representing Canada,
Mark Hewksbury.
And I felt so excited. I felt really ready. Slightly surreal that all of this effort comes down to this one moment in time.
There it is! He's done it! Olympic record! The dream lives!
At that moment, I was in such shock. My sexuality, my secret, none of that was in my thinking at all. That would happen a little bit later. But let me start at the beginning.
Ready!
I'm Mark Tewksbury, and this is Backstory. The Barcelona Summer Olympics, 1992.
He's got the ego, which a successful person has to have. You've got to have a little bit of selfishness and a lot of self-confidence and self-esteem. I just see in Mark this guy who's going to be successful, not just in the pool.
In those days, this is 1991, you know, there was no popular culture reference to LGBT issues. Sport, absolutely zero. Like, it just, the language was never ever discussed. It wasn't ever talked about. And I'd been harboring the secret for so long that I was gay. But I realized at some point, I needed to tell Debbie Muir.
You came off the wall and you had your first kick was the strongest one of all. Of all the five that you did, that was the best one?
Because she agreed to coach me.
I hope that I help Mark to believe in himself, to stay strong, to know that he can do it when the time's going to come.
And so Debbie and I started to work on all of this interesting underwater technical work, which was very significant because 30% of my race was underwater. But even more than that was Debbie started to listen to me and started to hear the kind of language I was using and sort of hear some of my defeatist comments and sort of negative things that were going on in my head. And I think that you can kid yourself that when you're holding a secret, you're getting the best performance out of yourself. But I know I saw when Debbie created that space and I could actually be honest, then there was the space to grow into what I actually could be.
Mark's a swimmer that needs a lot of positive reinforcement.
And what really struck me about that year, I hadn't intended to come out. I just intended to work on all the obvious things, you know, the week off the start, the week off the turn, my underwater kick, all of that stuff. But when you're asking someone to be like their 100% best performance, it's pretty impossible to do that if you don't have all of your energy going in the same direction. And I think it was just the fact that finally there was one person, Debbie Muir, that created this space where I felt like, okay, I'm going to be safe to share this. And I think by sharing this, it's actually going to take a huge amount of burden off of me having to deal with this issue alone. So it was about 6 months before the games, and I revealed my secret. I said, you know, I'm gay, and it just felt like gay went through the air, and it sort of hit her in the face. And she teared up, and I got instantly scared, because the reason I never told anybody was because I thought, my coach won't coach me, my teammates won't support me, I'll lose my livelihood, I might even be in physical danger in the locker room with other teams. I was so afraid of that outcome, and then to see Debbie tear up, it was like, oh no, my worst nightmare has come true. And then she just recovered, and she was like, wow, I can't imagine how hard this has been for you, and I'm with you 100%. Here I was heading into the final of the 100-meter backstroke, and I had never shared my secret. And so all that energy had been fighting on the inside, and it couldn't be focused on the outside goal. And at the time, I didn't really connect how significant it would be to my performance. But for sure, the physical element created some of that improvement, but unquestionably, having that confidence and that 100% energy behind my own performance made the ultimate difference.
And now, the hopes of Canada, the man from Calgary.
In those moments before the final in Barcelona,
a 24-year-old, he says he is a player now.
This secret that I'd had, that I was gay, had always, in my mind, kind of been a liability. It was something that was negative. But when I looked, and there's the best swimmers from Cuba and Germany and USA and France, I thought, wow, if these guys knew what it took for me to get here, they have no idea how strong I am. And it was so interesting that that thing that had been sort of a liability actually became my competitive advantage when it counted the most.
Mark flings himself. The swimmers can stay in for 15 meters. Let's see who pops up first. It is Rouse. Tewksbury's got himself a good start. He likes to play catch.
In the race itself, I just remember feeling really relaxed. The first 50 meters, I couldn't really see Jeff Rouse or the other American, David Burkhoff, because in backstroke, unless you're leading, you can't see.
Mark looks very good right now. He's made up almost all of that ground. He touches in second place. He's ahead of the other American. A little bit weak off the turn there, as you notice.
I remember doing a flip turn and swimming underwater and popping up, and two things happened. The first was I could feel this splash at my head.
Mark has to play catch up again, but he's good at that. He's got to pick it up right now.
And that was Jeff Rouse's foot. So I knew I was like a body length behind. But typically in the past, when Jeff was breaking world records, I couldn't see him at all. So at least he was on my radar. And the second thing was I gave myself two cue words, go now. And I just started to go now. Go now, go now.
Mark Tewksbury to the final 5 meters. Rouse and Tewksbury.
And I was catching the world record holder, and the stadium started to go crazy. Like 25 meters to go, I could just hear this wah. And I thought, they're cheering for something. Keep going, keep going. With about 5 meters to go, we were almost exactly even. It was like synchronized swimming, and we had two strokes left. And I just lunged for the wall.
It's gonna go to the wall, and on the wall! Derek Green! He's done it! Olympic record!
In Spanish, it's called oro, gold, and tonight, Canada has it.
Mark Tewksbury, Olympic champion.
Mark Tewksbury wins Canada's first gold medal of the Barcelona Games.
I did what anybody would do. I totally freaked out. And then I really went into shock. It was like, oh my God, this isn't just a race, this is the Olympics. They wanted me to get to the Olympics and do my best, and they're just so, it's like a bonus for all of us. We're all just sort of going, he won, I won. You know, we just can't believe it. I think whenever you have a secret, you know, at some point, it's not cool anymore. And most people, I think, would like to sort of get this information off their chest. And for sure, I felt that way. It was a very complicated thing, though.
Tewksbury's win has already earned him $100,000 in bonus money from his sponsors.
When I started to be successful in swimming, I also then started to get some contracts from corporate partners.
Tewksbury used to live on $650 a month from Sport Canada. Now he makes close to $100,000 a year. In the last few months, he's turned down five companies wanting his services.
And within those contracts was a morality clause. And it actually explicitly said, if you bring ill will or disdain to this company, then you're liable. You will be sued, you have to pay the money back plus damages. And arguably in 1990, 1991, being gay could have triggered a negative response to the morality clause. So I really felt like this compromised person. And as I started to try to, you know, get on the right side of it, coming out to my agent and telling them the truth, you know, often the response was, thank you for telling us, but we didn't have this conversation. because it was so loaded.
There certainly is a stereotype around the sports world that it should be something that's macho, should be something that is very masculine, very manly, and that we associate more femininity to homosexuality, right, in men. So there is that kind of separate life or that double life that seems to exist.
When I competed, you know, people say, did you talk to other gay athletes? And I go, what other gay athletes? Because nobody talked about this. In fact, I would have denied and did everything humanly possible to avoid even being associated with a gay athlete. In fact, I've become actually friends with Greg Louganis, who was one of my heroes, a very famous diver from the United States that won back-to-back golds in 1984-1988.
Oh, and he did it! He couldn't do it any better than that!
The greatest male diving performance in history!
But when Greg was on the pool deck, there were murmurs of like, oh, Greg's gay, he's a gay guy, he's fag, he's homosexual. And instead of that making me want to go say hi to Greg, it made me kind of shrink away every time he walked down the pool deck because I didn't want to be associated. And that was the reality back in my day. I think today the athletes find each other, they support each other. There's unity and there's strength in numbers. So that's pretty empowering. It's a completely different experience than it was 25 years ago. I was Canada's first openly gay Olympian, and it wasn't an easy decision back in 1998 to come out. But I got to a point where I couldn't not do it because there was no turning back. I felt like I had nothing left to lose. It's a little sad that it took so long for other people to feel comfortable enough to start coming out. When I came out to Debbie, I said to her, Debbie, I have to tell you something. And she said, I think I might know what it is. And then I was like, well, then why don't you tell me? And she said, no, you've got to tell me. And that was the process we went through. Fast forward 20-something years to pre-Sochi.
Homophobia in sports has made a lot of headlines this year, especially during the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, with Russia outlawing what it called gay propaganda and images of protesters being carted off by police.
I had a young 18-year-old luge athlete, John Fennell, who wasn't out yet. He would come out after those games subsequently.
Shortly after returning to Canada, Fennell came out to his family, friends, and coaches.
But at that time, he had not really said those words, I am gay, out loud to very many people.
So I was internally very anxious, and that was very reflected in my sliding. I was not having great runs. I was sporadic. I wasn't confident.
And I remember being there in my life, and he came over, and it was such a deja vu.
I understand you met with former Olympian Mark Tewksbury before coming out to your coaches and teammates. How did he help?
So I was going into Russia a stress case. I was so uncomfortable. I didn't think I could go, so I had to reach out to someone.
He said, I have to tell you something. And I said, I think I know what it is. And he said, then you tell me. And I said, no, you have to say it. I have to hear it from your mouth.
And he kind of mentored me through this whole process of, you know, coming out as an athlete, what it's going to mean, what it's going to do to your image, and how it's going to affect your performance.
I thought, wow, I'm the Debbie in this story, and this has come full circle, and it was a really magical moment.
And I'm really, really appreciative to have Mark on my side. He's probably one of the best humans I've ever met.
I think Sochi was a tipping point.
There's a rainbow hanging over Sochi. The pressure is growing on the International Olympic Committee to deal with Russia's anti-gay stance.
It's difficult to imagine what it would feel like to be a young 18-year-old going into an environment where there's military, there's guns everywhere, there's security, there's screening. You're hearing things like they can get on your phone and read your information, they get into your computer. And with the explicit target of LGBT athletes leading into Sochi.
Russia's controversial anti-gay laws.
Russia's laws banning so-called gay propaganda.
Russia's anti-gay legislation continues to be a hot-button issue.
These anti-propaganda laws that really targeted that community. I mean, there were a few athletes who were worried about potentially being put in jail because of who they were. And that's a lot of pressure on an individual. And so it was interesting. People were having to handle this pressure in different kinds of ways. Again, very difficult to perform at your absolute best when you have that sort of negativity going on in somewhere in your mind.
With Russia's anti-gay laws igniting so much discussion, many people around the world were waiting for another big moment of Olympic protest, a moment that would send a clear message about LGBTQ rights and possibly change the world. Well, that moment never came.
Progress takes a while to happen. When I came out in 1998, I really thought the next big name athlete would come out in like 5 years for sure. And suddenly leading up to Sochi, I was still the go-to guy 16 years later. Things are somewhat slow to change in sport, but I think they're also slow to change in other areas of society. You know, we're still not really having that huge box office star that's come out that's openly gay. We haven't had the huge sports star yet that's come out in a major hockey team or football team that's come out as gay yet. And so there's still some barriers to break through. Change doesn't happen overnight, but at least what's happening is the conversation starting. People can find that one person, I hope, that will at least give them the confidence to feel like they have someone to start to share this inner struggle with. Change does take time, but it's amazing. Once we start to have this conversation, it slowly moves from an issue to becoming a non-issue. But you've got to put in your time to make that happen. And until you take that first step, it can be the most terrifying thing imaginable.
And hopefully this is where people can realize that it doesn't matter, you know, if you're straight or gay, as long as you can play, you deserve to play.
Backstory is recorded and produced by Cecil Fernandez. For more behind-the-scenes stories, visit cbc.ca/backstory or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. I'm Mark Tewksbury.
For more CBC original podcasts, go to cbc.ca/originalpodcasts.